America should be grateful to God for the blessings he's given us.
Don't let anyone tell you that America's best days are behind her.
We have got to fight for this nation because I believe with all my heart this nation is in fact one nation under God.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It's great to be here. And have a friend traveling here from Nashville, financial guy, retired military, Bruce Shaw. And it's great to have Bruce just hanging out with us here for the next couple of days.
It's
and
fun.
Thanks, Bruce. You bet. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
It's good stuff. And we, different for me. I'm not used to sitting here with somebody. You know, I've done this before with somebody, but it's always, you know, when you don't do it on a regular basis.
Understood.
You know, it's...
You're doing fine, Dan.
Yes.
You should do this for a living.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Anyway, good stuff. I'm trying not to talk much about the markets, but I just do want to see where they are. And they were up about 250 at the open, 253, I think. We're at 196 on the Dow. So things have moved down a little bit, but... that's where we are right now. All the indices in positive territory, even the small cap indices in positive territory. So it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is the last 45 minutes of the day. See what it looks like. So one of the guys that I respect a whole lot is Muhammad El-Alarian. He's a used to be the considered the bond guru of the markets. Great guy, brilliant guy, and I really appreciate everything he says. He had a somewhat of a guy, the young guy that mentored under him, Neil Kashkari, which I like a lot too. He is now the president of the Minnesota Fed, and I believe he's going to be a voting member next year on the Fed. He's a young guy, but still very, really sharp. And so Muhammad this morning indicating that we need to see a truce, a ceasefire in trade between us and China. And I agree with that. You know, I know that he and many others would probably like to see a trade deal sooner rather than later. I don't really care about, I would rather go through the pain and not have a trade deal unless it's the right one.
Correct.
And we'll see, you know, but he's a brilliant guy and he's right. We need a ceasefire at least. We've got to stop the rhetoric from both sides. And in my opinion, I would like to stop the rhetoric from the U.S., and not even contribute to anything in reference to China. Just don't even talk about it and move on to other things. But that's probably not likely.
It's harder and harder with social media and 24-hour news cycle.
It is. And, you know, the president is somewhat obsessed right now with China. And so he talks about it a lot, tweets a lot about it. And we could only get that energy moved over to the Eurozone or other parts. I think in the long run, we'd be better off. So... But we'll see how that pans out here in the upcoming days. But certainly, that's where the president wants to keep some sort of focused on that. The U.S. Treasury yields are slipping lower and have been slipping lower earlier this morning as investors are beginning to pivot back out of equities. You know, they're so confused. They were, you know, flocking to equity, flocking to bonds, then back out. Risk trade was on again. Now they're back into going into bonds. And I have to keep in mind and remind everybody of this when I talk about, you know, the trade going in back into bonds, and we see the safety trade back on right now. Remember, that's also globally when it comes to the U.S. Globally, we are seeing global money coming into U.S. treasuries. And, you know, that's a good thing. We still remain, you know, a strong currency, a strong full faith and credit economy. And the only place in the world right now you can see a government bond yield with a whole number in front of the dot. So instead of dot zero something, we've got a one there. We'll see if that can hold. But nonetheless, it's a safety trade. So that's driving down the yield a little bit further right now. Today, no one is talking about the inversion that we saw momentarily last week. That was a big problem earlier in the week, was not a problem in the middle of the week, was a problem at the end of the week. But look, not every recession, I think we've had 66 recessions. No, I'm sorry, 62 recessions since 1966. That's where I was getting the 66. Look, or downturns. And, you know, not all of them were preceded by a inversion of the yield.
Right.
And they always leave that out when they're talking about, you know, the yield curve inverting. Everybody leaves that out because mainstream media is praying for a self-fulfillment of the prophecy of recession. It's all they got. They need it. So we've got to take it with a grain of salt when we see all the negativity. All right, we've got our Ag Report coming up. Craig Halgert with us. Then we're going to be right back. We're going to stay with phones, 610-363-1110. We'll be right back.
This is Craig Halgert with your Financial Issues Ag Update. Well, corn ended Friday about 3 cents lower due to pressure from the Chinese trade war headlines. Other than that, we really had no fresh news, and the weather remains benign. And as a result, traders are expecting crop conditions to improve slightly when they are released this afternoon. We did get the final pro-farmer numbers Friday afternoon, and they have the national average corn yield pegged at 163.6 bushels per acre. That's down 7.4% from last year. Now, if these projections prove correct, the corn crop this year will be the seventh largest on record. They also reported that the crop is very, very far behind. Although we knew that, they stated that it's going to be a few weeks before we get a better idea of the types of yields that we're going to be seeing. The bean complex felt a lot of pressure from trade war talks on Friday, and as a result, soybeans ended up 11 to 12 cents lower. The trade seemed to have little to no hope revolving around the resolution of the trade war, and that put a lot of pressure on the soybean market. As a result of the trade wars, China now favors Brazilian beans, and it seems as if we've lost our place in that market at this point. Pro farmers' estimates of the soybean yield came in at 46.1 bushels per acre, just well below the USDA's estimate of 148.5 bushels per acre, 23% drop in yield. Wheat was the fair-haired child of the grain markets on Friday, ending up higher straight across the board, with Chicago leading the way up 8 cents in the September contract. Support for the wheat market was derived from technical trading as well as a weak U.S. dollar that supports exports. Spring wheat harvest is moving along, and we're seeing some vomitoxin issues pop up in areas that were too wet to spray, but overall yields are looking pretty good. Cotton futures lost ground heading into the weekend, with December futures down 73 points as they closed at 58.21. And livestock futures took a beating straight across the board on Friday. October live cattle futures finished the day $1.70 lower, while the September feeder cattle were $3.17.5 lower at the closing bell. Lean hog futures had a horrible day, with the October futures down to $3 limit at the close. After the close, we had the monthly cattle on feed report. Total cattle on feed came in at 11,112,000 head, up 0.2% from last year. July placements were 2.1% lower than year-ago numbers, while marketings were 6.9% ahead of last year's pace at this point. Class 3 milk futures posted a lower close, with September futures down a point as they settled at 17.22. The cash livestock markets offered up more bad news than good. The day ended with choice beef boxes $1.76 lower as they settled at $237.52, while selects are $3.20 lower for the day as they closed at $212.71 per hundredweight. In hogs, the pork carcass values finished 29 cents lower as they settle out at $79.65 per hundredweight as we headed into the weekend. This has been Craig Halgert with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Seeley. It's great to be here. And we sure appreciate all of you. Bruce Shaw, a friend from Tennessee visiting, he's here as well. He's a financial guy, and glad to have him here. We're going to get to calls. We'll stay with calls. I want to tell everybody that, so if you're watching the program on financialissues.org or on FISM.TV, and we've got that little sidebar there that you can put your questions on. And we, when that was originally done, I think just out of never asking the question, our website guys made that for partners only. But you now, as of this morning, I thought it was last week, but I think something happened last week and they didn't get to it. But as of this morning, for certain, you can put your question up there, anybody. So go ahead and do that if you like. So if you're watching on the website, you can have an area there. You can put some questions up. And I know a lot of you watch on Facebook, so, and have been doing that for a long, long time, and we appreciate that. Instagram. I was told yesterday, I'm just telling you, I got to be honest, I don't even know what it is. But Instagram, I know what it is, but I don't really use it. But from what I understand, it's part of our fastest growing social media is Instagram. So that's
we're too old for Instagram, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I'm just not figuring out Twitter.
I just, you know, I know, I don't even do Facebook. So, but or everything I go on or do on Twitter goes on Facebook, so I know there's up there. All right, but anyway, you can put your question up on the website, financialissues.org. So check that out. Also, I just want to say hello to Angie. Angie, I haven't seen you in a while. Facebook, West Texas. So, I'm sorry, that's not Angie. I still haven't seen Angie in a while. It's Augie, my buddy from the oil fields in West Texas. Good to hear from you, Augie. And Roblin, I haven't seen you in a while. I appreciate you being with us. I'm glad you caught up with us there on Facebook. So thank you for that. And appreciate it. Marissa's asking, I have 17% in Israel fund. Should I take some of that, buy some other funds that I need to fill for 65? Retirement model. I try to stick to the model, Marissa. That's overweighted in that fund for the model. It's a good thing, I guess, right now that it's, I don't know how long it's been overweighted, but you might want to, I don't think there's any sense of urgency. I don't feel any sense of urgency there for you to make a move, but if you want to cut that back and get it in line, and use some of that, depending on your profitability there, to cut that back. I think if you're up, I would certainly pull back. If you're not up at all, I would hold on to it because I think it'll kick up. And, you know, their economy is so strong, it's crazy. I've spent an hour and a half on the phone last week with some folks that I'm doing some work with in Jerusalem. So from a financial perspective, and, you know, they feel really good about the outlook. I mean, their biggest problem is they don't have any workers. You know, I mean, they're full unemployment, and, you know, they're trying to allow to come in through their vetting process as many immigrants as possible. They are seeing those populations increase a little bit. That's helping them out. That's the only thing that's going to hold them
back.
Yeah, it is amazing. Yeah, it's an amazing economy. All right, we are going to, let's go to phones, go to Joe in Louisiana. Hey, Joe.
Good morning, Dan. How are you this morning?
Good.
I was to your comment about how Japan could affect or how China and Japan are somewhat competitors, and that was intriguing. I never realized that they were as small as Japan would be a competition. Could you expand on that?
Well, it's because of the electronics. So Japan has always been China's number one competitor. It's Japan that China many years ago set out to take market share from in the electronic side of things more than any other side. Now, Japan's got them beat in the auto sector primarily, but they are working at trying to compete against that. You know, China buying Volvo. Volvo, by the way, is a Chinese company now. And doing some other things in the auto parts sector. But Japan is a big competitor of China. And there's no love lost there between those two.
Could you maybe expand on some of the difference in politics between the two countries? Or I guess I should say communist, or in how Japan is run? Is it a communist or is it?
No, there's no comparison to the governments. China, obviously being a communist regime dictatorship, Japan very much believes, and I say believe, in capitalism. They are doing everything they can to grow a much more capitalist society. They would like to be more consumer driven than they are, and so would China, but that's a hard thing. Japan is working on that. They're an export nation, but Japan enjoys democracy and liberties that we would enjoy. They are not under the thumb of a government or a dictatorship like you would China. There's really no comparison there. People can move freely about the country. They can move freely around the world. If somebody from Japan wants to move here to America, not an issue. They can do that. Someone from China wants to do it. That is considered defecting from the communist regime. Quite a very different thing. But China is, I don't want to say that they are enjoy the capitalist kind of society that we enjoy, but they very much are free to innovate, to their ingenuity to go to work for them. So they're a very open society. They have problems in that their workforce is very much an aging workforce. It's the number one problem with Japan. The other problem is they spend more money. Their number one expenditure of the government is on interest on their debt. They have an enormous amount of debt. They have for many, many, many years, but that is their number one expense, more than their military, more than their social programs, more than anything else. Their number one expense is interest to service their debt. We're going to be not too far behind them if we're not careful, but they're a very different society than Japan. Or China.
Great. I appreciate the continuing education. If I could quickly put in a plug for you, I've been a member for a year, a little around there. And back before the 2016 election, I was listening to you, and you kept saying there was a correction coming, and I pulled what little I had in my IRA, or I put it on the sidelines. I didn't pull it out. I just put it in a safe zone. And the amount I saved in will pay for my membership for many, many years. I appreciate all you do.
Wow, how about that? Thank you, Joe. I sure appreciate you, brother. And thank you for your support. It means a lot to us. It's what keeps us going. So we appreciate that. Let me go to Tracy. Tracy calling us from Arkansas. Hey, Tracy.
Happy Monday, Dan. I've got a question. I'm a member. I manage our family investment account, and then also an IRA that came from my husband's 401k when he switched jobs.
Okay.
Yes. And my question is, do I apply the asset allocation model evenly across both accounts, or is there any advantage to favoring one sector or different, couple of sectors in one account as long as across the board all of the monies follow the asset allocation money model. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. Do you use the tracker?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, no, I wouldn't worry about it. I think, you know, I try to, and I've been doing this for 35 years, trying to help people understand that to treat their money as one pot, and not, you know, so you will certainly say, well, I have energy and consumer discretionaries and technology in one account because that's just the way it happens to work out. But I would look at it as one pot of money, and I don't think it matters where it's distributed. If you were looking at the more aggressive sectors, for instance, technology, healthcare, and the sectors that have much bigger swings, both on the upside and the downside. You had micro caps and small caps in there that in those sectors, you might, and you had a Roth IRA account, it might be best to focus those into the Roth because yes, they're more risky on the downside, but you get the advantage on the upside of the big swings and the potential for larger gains are there. And if you can get those larger gains tax-free, that's a very good thing and you might want to do that. But it doesn't sound like that's much of an issue for you as far as dividing your money up.
No, our Roth is really small compared to the traditional IRA. Okay, well, that helps because I've just been needing to spend all of this IRA money, you know, and just wondering, you know, if there was any advantage to favoring one, you know, or the other, but it doesn't sound like there's a lot.
No, there really isn't.
Just to apply it evenly.
Yeah. Just
okay,
one
can
pot
I ask
of
one
money.
More question?
Sure.
Well, I've got you on the phone. Okay, so if you could educate me a little bit about preferred stocks, is it possible that I use preferred stocks as cash, you know what I mean, for the cash allocation if I'm not needing that money for a long time?
No.
No, okay.
In 2008, I had some preferreds go down to $13. It took a long time to come back up. They were 25, okay. Went to 13, went to 11. So there is still a downside component there. Only do it if you're in it for the income. Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Seeley. It is great to be here. Phone lines are open, 610-363-1110, or at least we got a couple lines open. If you want to queue your call up, you can do that. Bill from our website said, we talked last week. I bought CD77 and still have about $100,000 to spread into the market. Should I continue to buy into mid-large caps? On your, as suggested, based on my age, which is now 60, or wait to see how all the next few months play out. No, look, listen, if you're long-term, you're not an income investor, obviously. So you're not an income investor. No, I would just keep little by little pecking away and getting that spread out through the other sectors. And I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, we had another 700-point drop. Doesn't get any better than that. I hope it doesn't. It could. But nonetheless, you know, good time. No, I wouldn't worry about it. I would start getting it spread out. Don't try to time it. It's impossible. But, you know, being 60, if you said, you know, I'm retiring in 3 or 4 years, that's a different story. But if I remember right, I think you're going to work until you're 70. If I remember right, Bill. But so I would just start weaning it in and not worry about it too much. So let me go to Chris. Chris calling us from Michigan. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Dan. I've been a partner for several years, and we are through an investor, and my agent called and said that we should possibly sell two of the stocks for a gain. And they were ConocoPhillips and Dominion. Is that a wise decision?
Well, I don't want anybody to be a trader, Chris. I want you to be an investor. So if you've owned those stocks for a long time, and you know, you don't want to hold them any longer, or you're looking to try to pick up some short-term gain, so you know, you can sell them if you want. I mean, I wouldn't. I mean, if you're a long-term investor and you still have a long-term time horizon, I would sell.
Okay, we are retired. Right now, we're not drawing, but you know, we will in the future. So, I mean, it's not something we're going to just. I think if I've heard you in the past, you said to maybe hang on to this stuff.
Well, I mean, look, I can't. Remember, your financial person can't make any money unless you have cash to trade. I'm just saying.
Right.
So they're not making any money. They may make a little fee they're charging, but they're not making a lot of money. They don't want you. And, you know, a lot of them don't even want you in individual stocks. I can't say too much about the companies because you already mentioned the names of them, and that kind of messes me up. But because people are take it as an endorsement, and they'll go out and buy them, and one of them's not on my buy list or whatever. So I just would say to you, so if you put them into something else and that goes up, are you going to sell that too, you know, and then try to pick up a little gain and then continue to try. Now you're becoming a trader. You will get burnt, just so you know. You will get burnt. Not might, not could, not should. You will. It'll come back to haunt you. So you got two good stocks. They're good companies. They're up. Could they go down? Yes. Will they go? Sure, they're going to be volatile. They're going to go up and down. In the long run, in the next 5 years, you also have two companies that pay very good dividends. You're going to be needing those dividends right now. Those dividends are accumulating inside your money market account, inside your you know, account, that money market account. So it's accumulating. So you'll be able to draw that cash at some point in time. And if you are thinking you may be converting to a income portfolio at some point in time, then you got a good start with these two companies. So, you know, but you got to decide, you want to listen to him or do you want to follow my thing? I'm not trying to be, you know, trying to make a decision or say anything bad about him. But, you know, the more people that you listen to, the more confusing it gets. It gets harder and harder to figure out what to do. So I'll just leave it up to you. But that's, you know, if you're a long-term investor, I'd hold it for the long term.
Okay, Dan, appreciate it.
All
you
right,
have a great day.
All right,
God bless.
Thank you. 610-363-1110, 610-363-1110. Folks, what I mean by this trader-investor thing, I don't want you to be a trader. I do say sometimes, all right, listen, let's sell out of the stock because it's up significantly. Yeah. But, you know, if you're going to be a trader, you better really be willing to do analytical work and stare at your computer all day long, in my opinion. I'm a long-term investor. I want you to be long-term investors. I want you to believe in your portfolio. If you believe in your portfolio, the only changes you're looking to make is to add more stuff that you believe in.
Correct.
Not change what you're doing. So I would just, you know, I don't just hang in there, you know, and yes, things are up. We're not looking to, one of those stocks was a foundational stock. We don't take profits on foundational stocks. But look, it's hard when you have, I'm not trying to discourage anybody from having a financial advisor. If you have a financial advisor that you trust, then man, you, and has served you well, then that's what you should be going with. And, you know, I believe that. If you have a financial advisor that you trust, that has always served you well, that is more than willing to be biblically responsible, if that's a conviction of yours to do, then, man, you know, you don't even need to partner with the ministry, though I'm glad you do, to keep us on the air. Just, I mean, that's your person, and you stick with them. If you have someone that you don't have a lot of faith in, you don't have a lot of confidence with, I don't know why you would have them. Because if you're telling them what to buy and sell, why do you need that person? I'm just saying. You know, if you're following along another system, then just go to a discount brokerage and start, you know, because the best financial advisor that you can trust with all your heart is going to be you. And so I would, you know.
Yeah, let me echo that.
One or
Dan,
the other.
Yeah. Being in the industry, the don't know the advisor. Don't know if it's a level fee. It's the end of the month. Maybe there's a commission that needs to get generated. If you trust the advisor, stick with it. But if we're on competing and you get an end of the month phone call, I'd always be curious as to why the phone call.
Yeah.
To be quite honest. And again, this is on my side of the table. I'm a guest here, so I can be a little more open.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
so,
right.
That's what I would go with, you know, understand why the phone call.
Yeah.
What was the rationale behind it?
Yeah, it's like I always say, you know, and people are always, I get a lot of phone calls, Bruce, from people that are trying to make that decision on taking a lump sum payout for their profit sharing or pension, whatever it is, or not. And I always say, look, every financial advisor you talk to is going to tell you to take the lump sum payout. I mean, they want to make money. They want you as a client. Yep. If you don't take that, they've got nothing to sell.
That's right.
You know, they can't make any money. So they're always going to tell you that. I'm not saying it's not right sometimes.
Right.
Sometimes it's the right thing to do.
Right.
Sometimes it isn't. But you're not getting that. You know, you got to take it with a grain of salt
got
and
it.
Understand that.
Got it.
They have a right to make a living. They should make a living. They should get paid for what they do and all those things. I don't have a problem with that. But we've got to take that in. You got to take those things, like you said.
Right. We had a local company that made the offer. I had a handful of people come in, some prospective clients, some not, and each answer was different. It depended on their particular situation.
Right.
Some, the lump sum made sense. Some staying with that guaranteed money was the best solution for them. So
yeah.
You got to have an advisor that's going to look at it from all angles and not just their revenue stream.
Yeah, and that's critically important. And if you're trying to be biblically responsible and you're convicted that you want to be biblically responsible, then you've got to keep that in mind. That's not going to be a conviction. I know that people say to me, well, I go to church with them and I trust them. They may, that's okay, I get that. But they also, a lot of people, not just advisors, people in general, have an incredible ability to compartmentalize their Christianity. So this is work. This is how I make my living. That's, you know, that this is this, you know, what I do on Sunday and the rest of my walk, you know, I do it different. There is no gray zone. I don't believe in demilitarized zones. So I think that we need to, you know, keep that in mind too, and always have that understanding.
Stick with the plan, whatever the plan is.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You got to have the plan. You got to know the plan. And that, you know, there's a couple things that happen is people have, they keep their, they're afraid to let go. So they keep their advisor. They try to do our plan. They try to do their advisor's plan. They're trying to do maybe follow. I have a newsletter person they follow, and that newsletter person is saying, buy this, sell this, do all that. And they're trying to do that. And they say, well, they're going to do all this and see who does the best. What they're doing is they're just confusing themselves.
Yeah.
And you never have any real rhyme or reason Correct. As to why you're doing something.
Cohesive strategy.
Right. And one of the things I ask people all the time, when I meet them at a town hall meeting or something, they say, well, I'm so thankful, you know, I love. And I say, let me ask you something. You've been around a long time, you've advised, is this the first time you've ever known what you had and what you have? And they've always said, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I never knew what I had. And if I did know, I didn't know why I had it. So, you know, there's something to be said for that.
Yes.
Anyway, we're going to get back to phones right after this. We'll be right back.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
So, I already answered Marissa. I'm sorry, I was looking at social media. But John is saying, John's just making a comment. Everybody blames Trump for the stock market drop. But what about Business Roundtable recent statement? That's what I'm going to be talking about today with Tony Perkins on MarketWatch. Although you've probably heard my statements on that and saw my tweets on that. But nonetheless, that profits and shareholder supremacy is going to be by the wayside. So, you know, it is, it's a good point. It is a problem, but, you know, it's funny how they blame. I think it is the kiss of death for any president to talk about the markets. I've been saying that since Richard Nixon. Don't talk about the markets. Yep. It's a no-win situation.
It is.
You can't win. Just don't even bring it up. Don't take credit for it. But if you're going to take credit for it, then you've got to accept responsibility when it's going down.
Yep.
It can't be both ways. You got to do both. That's why I say just leave it up. Just forget about it. You know, and so it is a problem. And so, and mainstream media is never going to give this president credit when the market goes up. They did the last president, but they're not going to give this president. And they're going to give him all the blame for when it goes down. And the best thing you could do is never talk about it. But anyway.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. Chuck says, can I have an IRA and a 401k at the same time? You can if you don't max out your 401k. So you got to be careful of that. Just see what, call your human resources department and say, hey, how much can I put into my 401k? Maybe you're already maxing it out. Maybe you're not even close. If you're just matching, if you're just putting in what they match, you're probably okay, and you can do an IRA account. Jay is saying hello from Colorado Springs. Jay, I'm glad you're listening. You're on our website. I wonder, did you find us? I'm not sure I'm on. I think I'm on in Colorado Springs. Matter of fact, I know I am now that I think about it. On Calvary Satellite Network or Christian Satellite Network on the evening, and maybe that's where you found us. And then now check us out live on the website. So if that's the case, great. Welcome. Thank you, Jay. I appreciate that. Also, you know, you can go to our phone app. We got a phone app. You can download that. So a lot of you might be listening to this in the late evening, and you want to listen live, just go to your app store on your phone, and you can download it. And if you have a data plan, just go click on your Wi-Fi in your office, your home, on your phone, and you don't have to worry about data. But anyway, I don't think, and we may be on, I might be on, in Colorado Springs during live hours. I'm just not sure. John is saying, Dan, I'm 67. Can I draw 100% of my Social Security? I'll probably work until I'm 70. You can draw what they say, Social Security, that is, your full full Social Security, which is age 66. So, yeah, you can. But if you want to make another 30% a month more, maybe you don't need the 30%. That's fine. I would wait to 70. I'm the only one that's going to tell you to wait to 70. Nobody does. Drives me nuts. But look, you're still working. You're still in the accumulation phase. Keep accumulating all you can. That's great. That's a beautiful thing. You have the greatest asset you'll ever have, your ability to earn income. You still have that. Wait till you're 70 to start drawing Social Security so that you get that extra 30% that you're going to receive between 66 and 70. So I would hang in there and wait. You say, you're asking, is it a bad strategy to draw, Social Security and put it? No, don't. Just forget about it. Just don't draw it. Oh, you're going to put it into your IRA and you're going to do that. Look, when you're 80 years old, and you've got electric bills and these bills to pay are 85, whatever it might be, that you're worried about income coming in, are you going to be just thrilled that you've accumulated a little bit more, that you now have to pay tax on the Social Security that you draw because you're still working and you're probably over the limit of threshold that you can draw without paying taxes? So you're paying tax on it. And do you really care that you have accumulated a little bit more? I drew Social Security and put it in my IRA. Or do you care about how much money you got coming in every month? That's how I answer that. All right.
I'm a wait to 70 guy myself.
So. Yeah. My wife and I are waiting until we're 70 unless something happens that doesn't allow that to happen. But we're waiting, man. You got your military pension now.
I do. I am blessed in that. And I tell that with my clients. I always describe that ahead of time. So I am in a different situation.
Yeah.
You know, I have a guaranteed income stream that I'm blessed
with.
But
it doesn't matter.
It does not, but
I do. You should want to get more, right?
Exactly right.
When you're going to need
all the other fundamentals come into play, but I do tell that. I'm up, open and up front, and I say my dynamic is a little bit different. Because I have a safety net that I'm blessed with, yes.
That's great. Let me go to Ann from Texas. Hey, Ann.
Hi, Dan. Thank you so much for your ministry.
You're welcome.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
And one of them is crazy now. I don't know if I want it on the air.
It's not crazier than I've probably gotten, so go ahead.
I'm thinking, I've been wanting to move, you know, I retired 5 years ago.
Okay.
And
how old are you? You're 65?
I just turned 65.
Okay. Happy birthday.
And, thank you. And my husband died in 97, so I draw his Social Security. I'm not going to draw mine until 70.
Okay.
And, I get a pension from a big corporation that I work for 40 years. So the Social Security just goes into savings, and I live off of my monthly pension.
Right.
So I took my 401, and I've moved it a couple of times because the charges every month were just, you know, $600?
Yeah.
You know, for doing what? And so I've moved it a couple of times. I'm tired of that now. And I just hate dealing with money. I do. I don't know if I move it, if I join you. Do you have your own mutual fund, something that I don't have to go in there every so often and do it myself, or do you recommend doing it yourself?
No, I don't have anything here that is our own mutual fund, but I do have some that I recommend. And I would recommend, not these particular mutual funds, but I would recommend if you do it on your own and you're doing it in mutual funds, that you just forget about it. And you just don't move it. Pick a couple of funds that you believe in. This is not money you're going to need to draw from anytime soon. And I would just... you know, if you feel as though when I say do it yourself, I'm not asking you to manage anything. What we would want you to do, what I would encourage you to do is set up mutual funds that you just forget about. Your goal is you got to spend a little time and do a little bit to get the account set up. But once you get it set up, ideally, you never have to look at it again if you don't want to. And if you're smart, you never would. You just leave it alone and not even look at it. And yeah, it's going to be down some months. It's going to be up some months, but never look at it. I always tell this story in 2008. It's a true story. I'm telling you, I went a year and a half and I never opened one of my IRA. I have a SEP IRA that I've had forever that I never opened one statement. Didn't open them. Just threw them in a drawer. Never looked at them. Not because I was afraid, and I'm a very disciplined investor and a very disciplined manager, and I wasn't likely to make any changes, but I didn't want to be tempted to make any changes because I knew I had a good strategy, and I knew it was going to be fine, and I didn't even want to look at it. I didn't want to know. I didn't need to know. I didn't want to know. I knew it was in the tank, and I didn't want to lose any more sleep than I normally lose. So I didn't even look at it, but that's the kind of attitude that you have to have sometimes. So I would tell you, the moving your account around is one of the worst things you could do. And it really hurts the account in the long run. Very seldom do you benefit from moving it around because you're always losing time in the market when you do that. You know, if we look back at the market over any 10-year period, it's about at tops, it's in that 10-year period, about 32 days that made the majority of the gain. Worst case, it can be as little as 17 days. If you're moving it around, there's a good possibility that you're going to be out of the market during some of those key days that you wish you were in. And the thing is, you got to leave it in there and forget about it. So I would suggest to you, Ann, that you open an account at a TD Ameritrade. There's even an office, TD Ameritrade office, probably near you. And you can go in there if that would make you feel more comfortable. Set it up, and then you can follow along with us, our asset allocation model, and then forget about it. I'm right up against this break, Ann. I'm sorry I can't follow up with you on that. But we've got to run. Folks, if you've got to leave us, I hope you have a wonderful day. And remember that all that you have is his. Let's be a good and faithful steward. More of financial Jesus issues said, right after
you'll
this.
Sell all that you have, give it to the poor, take up the cross, follow me. It's not your money I want your heart.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.